Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Are you tired of juggling contacts, manually following up, and deals falling through the cracks? We can fix it so you never lose another lead, enabling 24/7 sales and support via an AI that learns your business. Ready to close more deals with less hassle? Get a free trial of our marketing automation at thebuzzcrm.com.
Pat, my dear friend, thanks for coming on. We're going to have some fun. I'm starting a podcast to talk about the passion and the nuts and bolts and the history of amazing whiskey. And I'm not really going to deal with a lot of the new stuff, but I'm going to talk about just what's happened in the past and the passion behind it. And one thing, I've had the enjoyment of getting to know you at Mahesh's events at Universal Whiskey, is you are a man who has seen and done a lot with great whiskey. Would I be correct in saying that?
I've tried.
Pat, you want to take a moment, introduce yourself to the audience, tell them a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind?
Sure.
Nothing crazy,
sure.
As much as you feel like sharing.
Okay. Pat McCarthy. I've been involved in the whiskey industry for over 50 years. Started out first as a merchandiser, part-time job. I worked for the fire department in Newark, New Jersey, full-time. My days off, I did all the merchandising for every major company at one time or another. After I retired from the fire department, I ran the Brown-Forman Display Company in New Jersey for about 3 or 4 years, then moved into the retail end of the business. Really became super passionate about scotch and bourbon probably about 25 years ago. And it's just growing since. And that's about
Pat,
it.
Walk me through bourbon and scotch 25 years ago. What would a go-to drinker be 25 years ago?
And it, with the bourbon, it's, I mean, it, you, people will say Jack Daniels is not bourbon. And okay, it's not bourbon technically. It was the bourbon category, followed by Jim Beam, Maker's Mark. Maker's was considered the super premium bourbon at the time. But the average drinker, Jim Beam White, Jack Daniels, you know, maybe if you were doing something special, you might have the Maker's. And then Beam came out.
So would Maker's have been back then, would that have been like the Johnny Walker Blue of bourbon?
Yes.
If you're doing something special, you bust out the Maker's.
Right. And there were people that were so locked into the Maker's, though, that they wouldn't consider any other brand. It became probably the first cult whiskey. One of the best bottles of bourbon I ever drank was a Jim Beam White. It was in Bettles, Alaska, which has a population of about 25 people. Had just finished dog sledding for 6 nights. And when we got to the bar in the town, we had to buy the whole bottle, which my son-in-law and I, you know, finished along with some other people on the trip. And it's, to me, whiskey, besides the flavor, the history and the role of the whiskey itself, is the people that you're drinking with. And I think that goes back to the passion of the whole thing.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, 100%. Now, and then back then, scotch, what would the scotch reach just for have been?
It would have been the blends, Dewar's, Chivas Regal, that didn't get into single malts until Ardbeg was reintroduced into the United States, which would have been 20 something years ago, I guess. The 10-year-old, I tried a couple sips of it at the store I was running at the time, just to see if I wanted to bring it into the store. Loved the flavor. Half hour later, I took a drink of water, and it just opened right back up on my palate, and I fell in love with Ardbeg. You know,
wow. So prior to that, I mean, you're talking about the blends. I mean, these are once again international institutions of Scotch blending. It's a perfect blend, but no one's really. There's not much creativity because there's no demand for creativity. Would that be a fair statement?
Back in the day, because what you wanted then was consistency.
Yeah.
They introduced the chill filtering so that the whiskey always looked pretty. To me, it always stripped out flavor. You know, you're taking the essential oils out of it. And it just loses something. The blends today, though, I mean, and you have your standard blends, which they're still looking for that consistency. But you have people like John Glacier blending at Compass mm-hmm. Box.
I mean, I call him Iron Chef of whiskey. He takes great whiskeys and makes them better. I mean, he's got great ingredients. I mean, this last one, the one that came in the fake book, I forget, Velasco or something like that, was unbelievable.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, what do you have, a 27-year-old Highland Park in there or something? It was like, I'm like, of course, you have great ingredients going in and you're a master blender. And of course, you know, for anyone listening to this, you know, John Glazer came from the whole Johnny Walker blending. You know, like he knows how to blend really well. And at some point I'll have him on the podcast, but like his biggest thing was he just didn't like making the same thing every single day. He wanted to do other stuff.
Right.
And I think that's...
I've introduced people to Scotch that were strictly bourbon drinkers. And they could not drink Scotch. They hated it. And the problem is they took the wrong Scotch. Yeah. I introduced them with John's Myths and Legends. They fell in love with Scotch.
I mean, I'm upset. I mean, I just picked up another Circus. You know, Compass Box Circus on auction. I can't wait to open. I still say, when people say, what's one of the best blended whiskeys you have? I said, Compass Box The General. I don't even know what was going on there, but that thing is just like, you just stop. Your whole day just stops when you have a sip of that. you want to hit pause and just enjoy every moment as you go through the ride in your mouth and in your brain and everywhere.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, so now you've got these. I mean, you go back 25 years ago, it's pretty much four or five houses between bourbon, four or five houses between Scotch that are, you know, dominating. There's obviously no demand for any more than that. Nobody really wants the space. Like you said, they're making products that are consistent because that's just what the market wants. And then at what point in your drinking life do you have something that's just you like a holy shit moment, like from like maybe 15 20 years ago, you're like, well, I've drank this, you know, these Johnny Walkers, these Jack Daniels, these Maker's Marks, like I've drank the Shivers, I've drank that now for 10 years. When did you see something new come on the scene that got your attention? I know you said the Ardbegs came back in and that helped with Scotch. Like, run that for me.
The once I had the Ardbeg, and it's a funny transition, you know, people say you don't start with a heavily peated Isla whiskey. But from there, I branched out into the Dalmores. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they just have some lovely stuff. Jura, when it came back.
I just picked up a 27-year-old Jura on auction, a signatory release, God knows when. I was like, I'll take a 27-year-old Jura.
Yeah.
So that was Patterson at his, I mean, he's always in his prime, but I would imagine that's like when he's really hitting his stride.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, he was constantly in the lab, we'll say, before he was really out on the road all the time. You know, there weren't ambassadors running around. He had his time to spend as a master blender, you know.
Well, I tell people what's the difference between now and the past is like now you have a cell phone, you have Zoom, you have email. You know, 25, 30 years ago, they didn't have that. They just went to work and did the best job that they possibly could. And then they left and maybe they took some booze home and had a good weekend or shared it with friends. They're like, hey, this was a great week.
So Dalmore
comes around, and obviously Dalmore comes into the New Jersey market.
Yes.
And comes across you. And then, like, how do they bring that to market? I mean, it's I wouldn't say it was revolutionary for the time, but it was maybe the first.
It was the first one that almost had a line extension. They had the 12-year-old. They had the cigar malt. And there was something else they had back in those days. But compared to today's prices, you know, they were ridiculously inexpensive. And it was still blends, though. The blends were still really driving the industry, you know, from at the retail level. After Dalmore, you had the Johnny Walker, the Diageo collection. You know, when they had Port Ellen and Brewera, you know, those. And they did to single malts what the Booker's small batch collection did for bourbon.
They showed another side of it. Well, like we were saying earlier, it's a cleaner for us. You know, less people have touched it. The oils are in there. Everything's in there.
Right.
It's like, this is it.
Yeah, and they would do promotions where they would taste across the line. It was, they'd start with the Dalwhinnie and work their way up to Lagavulin. So people could actually, you know, sit there in a bar. And they did a lot in bars. In New Jersey anyway, you know, the bar where you'd have the younger crowd willing to try things. They weren't locked into, well, I drank this because my father and my grandfather drank it. And that really, to me, that's what really got it kickstarted.
And when you say on those bars, I mean, I grew up in South Africa. You start drinking scotch way before you probably legally should. But it was always on the rocks. Like, nobody was drinking anything neat.
Right.
That I ever saw. I mean, I didn't probably start drinking neat till probably a decade ago when I really like wrapped my head around the liquid. But before then, it was an encounter to be with friends and have a good time. And you threw a few rocks in there.
Yeah. And I very seldom will have ice. If I have ice in a drink, it's usually a cocktail. An old fashioned,
yeah.
But
well, I also will drink ice if I'm if I'm somewhere where I don't want to be there very long, and I don't feel like drinking a lot. I'll put ice in this. I can just nurse that drink, you know, for 45 minutes and get the F out.
Yeah, or if it's super hot and I'm sitting outside with friends who are, I don't smoke cigars, but if they're smoking, I'll sit out with them, and it's really really hot. Well, then maybe I'll throw a cube or two in, but
I don't know. So now you've got the single malts are starting to like hit Jersey. Now what's happening in the world of bourbon? And this, I'm assuming now we're up into the late 80s.
That would, let me see. Yeah, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
And the bourbons with the small batch collection from Beam, you know, Booker's, Basil.
I didn't realize Basil went back that far, to be honest. I knew Booker did. I didn't realize that Basil went back that far.
Yeah, actually, maybe it's the mid-90s to late-90s. But they're the ones that got it moving. Back in the 70s and 80s, you had more companies, but then they, you know, bourbon died. It was brown goods died. It became vodka and rum.
I mean, I was doing nightclubs early 90s, and I remember the vodka rush. Like, it was just like, that was it. You could have 37 different flavors of shitty vodka, and that's what they wanted. They're like, oh, do you have the black currants? Oh, do you have the strawberry? Yeah, sure, we got all that shit. Yeah. Schnapps. I remember schnapps was big. Ice cold schnapps. You would drink that, and you'd, you know, the next day you'd feel like, you know, a sugar hangover, the worst.
Right.
So basically, brown dormant.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Gin.
Yeah.
Which is making a resurgence now.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I feel like gin is actually making a resurgence now.
It is. I still don't drink very much of it anymore. I always blamed it for the headaches. I think it was probably the tonic. There was that, you know, the sugar in the tonic giving me headaches. I basically only drink brown spirits.
Yeah, me too.
And I'll drink rum, but it's got to be rum that drinks like a whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care for the sweeter rums.
I mean, talk about the category of rum, and there's no financial. I mean, I was in Costa Rica a few weeks ago for work, and the 25-year-old Furtucana is for like $127 a bottle. I'm like, oh my God, you guys took 25 years to make this and you're only charging that? And that always goes back to me in the current day and the pricing. I'm like, I don't believe that the stuff actually costs a lot. It's what the market was willing to pay for it dictates the price.
Yeah. The whole thing with rum, though, if they put 25 years on the label, that doesn't mean all the rum in there is 25 years old.
They don't have to follow the rules of scotch or bourbon.
As long as they mix a little bit of it in. You know, there's a few on the market that, you know, are aged properly. But, you know, and then people say, well, how come this rum is 25 years old and it's $120 and you have that 25-year-old scotch for $3,000?
So when does, talking about the 25-year-old scotch for $3,000, at what point does Macallan show up on the scene?
I started at Bayway Liquors about 17 years ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Macallan was a nice brand. It was, the 12-year-old was a better everyday drinker. The 18-year-old, I sold the 18-year-old for $150 a bottle.
Which was a lot, no?
It was, but it had already created the whole mystique, the romance about it being the best of the best. I sold a case a week, 12 bottles a week. It went, the 25-year-old was about $250, and I sold a case a month. And now if I could get a case a month, I'd be happy, you know.
Well, that's what I tell people all the time. They're like, where do you get your whiskey? I'm like, you can't get whiskey anymore. You literally have to be lucky. Like, the whole game changed, and the game even changed more during COVID, because I felt, at least out here on the West Coast, when the distributors lost the restaurants because they were closed for COVID, they went to the liquor stores and the grocery stores and started pushing out the inventory there. And then once those guys got comfortable and COVID was, you know, quasi over, they're like, oh, sorry, you're not getting any more.
Right.
It's going back to the restaurants now.
Yeah, that happened with the wine. The allocated wine said they would sell to the restaurants. All of a sudden now they're coming to the store and say, hey, we can give you 25 cases instead of your usual one case a year. You know, I brought a lot of wine home.
Yeah, there's a lot of great wine out there now. There really is. I mean, same as whiskey. You know, I what I like about, you know, when we do our event, you know, annually with Mahesh at Universal Whiskey is like they'll bring out random stuff. Like, look what the Gordon McPhail brings out, this like distilleries I've never jumped into. I mean, I'd never drank a Royal Brocklaw before Universal Whiskey. I just bought a 17-year-old on auction the other day to drink. Right. Heavy sherry cask. You know, like I'm like, yeah. Well, I kind of like these old little quirky distilleries where I honestly believe the guy that put that whiskey in the barrel, he just did the best job he could that day. Like, that was it. He had no distractions. He didn't have to go show up in Korea to be a brand ambassador and do a show. He didn't have to do fucking Instagram. He didn't have to do shit.
Yeah.
He just did his job and enjoyed it.
I have
noticed a lot of independent bottlers in the last like 10 years. Would you say that there's been a spike in independent bottling with the guys who maybe were sitting on inventory?
We started dealing with independents probably before most people did. Back 15, 16 years ago, we had in the store about 275 different single malts. And a lot of them came from the independents. You had Douglas Lang, Gordon McPhail, and then we started buying barrels from them. I had from Duncan Taylor, a 19-year-old Macallan that was aged only in a bourbon barrel.
Wow.
And I was selling it for less than $100.
And what would you say? Okay, in 2022, what's market value on that? $399 plus?
It's got to be at least, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very strange time.
Right. And it was also cast strength.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, we've done a lot of barrels of scotch. Nowhere near what we do with bourbon, just because it's not as readily available. The funny thing, you were talking about buying things at auction. I just picked up three bottles of the very first Brooklady scotch I ever did with Jim McEwen.
Oh, wow.
And it was 14 years old. He finished it in a rum barrel. And it was, I think I probably sold it for about $60 back then. It was 2008. When I first did it, and I paid $100 at auction.
So just for the listeners of this, there's a very weird thing going on. Like, they're all probably feeling this. There's a financial shift happening, and the last couple of years have been like a little too good, and the other shoe appears to be dropping. So these last 2 months of auctions, where products might have sold for a lot higher, they just sat there. And for guys like me and Pat who want to drink amazing whiskey, it's kind of like, oh, wow, really? It's just sitting right there on page 74 of the auction and nobody gives a shit and there's five bids on it? All right, I'll throw an extra five on it. I mean, yeah. I got 10 bottles, Pat, for like $1,500. Right. I have a 30-year-old Cambus, a 27-year-old Jura, a 2000 Blantons, another Blantons Gold, because I enjoy drinking that when I drink Blantons. I got 10 bottles for $1,500. I was laughing my ass off. I'm like, is this for real? They charge me more on shipping to get it to the United States than some of the whiskey. I'm like, this is nuts. So, Pat, you've drank a lot of great stuff. What to you, as far as standouts? Because I want to say in the last probably 5 years, there's been a lot of expensive bottles, whether the pricing is deserved or not, but really incredibly aged, like, you know, the 40 years, the 32s, you know, some serious crazy stuff. What's some, like, you have this whole foundation that you've built the last 50 years of just enjoying whiskey, and then the last 10 years kind of became like, oh shit, like, there's a lot of expensive, whether it's deserved or not, but like, there's a lot of really good whiskey. What's like been a standout for you in the last couple of years?
The things that were readily available. And I'll go back 10 years, you know, start there. There was the brewers, 32-year-old brewers that, you know, I would bring it to the store. I'd bring cases in. The Port Ellens. Port Ellens.
That Johnny Walker Port Ellen is spectacular.
Yes. I just hope when they reopen and start going that it tastes like the old stuff did.
Yeah. I mean, you and I both know. I highly doubt that, but I guess it's good for the brand. I mean, it's going to bring, you know, I'm waiting on the next auction to pick up some of those older Port Ellens.
I'll tell you another whiskey that I really enjoyed was Mahesh's Prometheus. When he came out with that.
No, I haven't actually had that. I got to ask him about that. He's back in town next week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's all gone, but it was, I can't tell you what it was, but it was from Speyside and it started with an M. That's the biggest hint that he could give me. And if you don't guess it right, then
yes, then you don't really know what's going on.
I could never drink again. Yeah.
It was
an old style one that had a little bit of peatiness to it, and it was super enjoyable. I'm not big on the huge sherry bombs. I can enjoy them. It's not something that I seek out. So I was really surprised pleasantly with what he had done with it.
Well, yeah. It's interesting that you talk about that big one with an M and having a little smoke and stuff, because the other day I was fortunate enough to drink Rachel Berry's released these 2 40-year-old Benriachs.
Yes.
And one of them, the one that I got to try, what had a hint of smoke, which is obviously not their profile at all.
Right.
Or anything like that. And I was like, I was talking to Stuart and we were drinking. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, it's like, you just don't put those big houses with the smoke. And when they do it on the off chance, you're like, I don't know why you don't do that more often.
Right. It's such a pleasant surprise.
I said to Stuart, it was like truffle season. You just weren't, you know, you come in and you ordering your regular pasta and they're like, hey, you want to throw some truffles on me? You're like, hey, why not? This is like, oh shit, what the fuck is this?
Right.
Very enjoyable. And then as far as bourbons, because that I feel like it's like open season now. Everyone and their mother has a bourbon. In the last 10 years, what's been a phenomenal experience that you've had with bourbon?
Well, you mentioned one of them with the Blanton's Gold.
Yeah,
and straight from the barrel is my favorite on the Blanton's. I do a barrel of Blanton's every year for the store. I was just drinking a bottle side by side with the straight from the barrel that somebody sent me from Europe, and geez, there was no comparison. as much as people send me, oh wow, your pick is great, because you haven't had it alongside this.
Well, next April I'm going to bring this 2000 Blanton's with me to Vegas for us to drink, because I'm like, I know it's different. Like, we can, and it's almost like, it's nothing like crazier when you're sitting at, you know, a usual haunt, like, you know, a brandy library or a fine and rare. You're like, can I taste a 12-year-old scotch from the 80s and 90s and then one from, you know, 2017-ish?
Right. Yeah.
You're like, wow, those are not the same. They have the same name and the same number, but they are not the same. And I think that's the part to me that's kind of like, I get it. It's money. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's money. Money rules the world. But when you get that opportunity to just drink that special whiskey from a time period, you know, it's like literally a time capsule that was locked because nobody cared. It's a different whiskey.
I just had some Glen Grant from 1955. It was just fantastic. The only problem was I didn't have enough of it.
So I was in Portland a few weeks ago for work, and there's a gentleman there, Tommy, who's got a I can't, I mean, I feel terrible. I can't remember his bar off the top of my head. He'll come on the podcast at some point. But we did called the Ballard Cut. That's what it's called. Anyway, he has, I don't know, a couple of thousand bottles in his bar. And he took me down a history, Pat, of like the first Hibikis. And I had the Hibiki, the first Hibiki 17, and then the 2017, obviously, right, like night and day.
Yeah.
Then I tried those Pappy, the Wizards. He had the blue, yeah, and the red one. I had the blue one. I was in shut the F mode, just sat down there. I was like, oh my God, what is going on here? And then we had like some 1960s Four Roses. That was not, and then he had a 1960 old Fitz, like right next to it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I mean, it's just different. It's a whole caliber of greatness above everything else, but it's understandable because of that was the period.
Right. We were down in Lexington. I was doing the barrel pick down there, and we were in Justin's House of Bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And I was drinking a 10-year-old Van Winkle from, oh God, sometime in the early 60s. Oh. And it was just so nice, you know. I actually text Julian and asked him to come over and meet us. He goes, yeah, I wish I knew. But,
I mean, I tell you, one of the things that I drank that night was a 2003 Michter's just US 101.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. It was like it was like Dr. Pepper meets bourbon. Like, it's like, that's... I just sat there and it was just popping all. I was like, I said to Tommy, it's like, this is like when my kids have those pop rocks and the shit just pops all over your tongue. This thing is right, just like exploding in my mouth with all, and he yeah, opened it fresh. He bought it on auction. He said nobody wanted it. This thing just sat there. Nobody caught that it was from 2003. You know, right, they were just like, oh, this is just, you know, your standard $40 Target Michter's pour.
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, he got it. And I was like, holy, wow, wow, wow. Yeah. And then he busted out a couple of bourbons from Pennsylvania in that same era that Michter's originally was starting.
Yes.
You know, not the Michter's we know now, but like some of those old Pennsylvania whiskeys were, I mean, I have like a 23-year-old rye that was just nuts. I mean, I love ryes. So for me, it's like, yeah, it's something there.
I think Michter's does rye so well.
Oh, I mean, I saw people ask me, what's the best thing you've ever had? I'm like, it's that 2014 Michter's rye, 25-year-old. Yeah. Best rye I've ever had. You know, I got to say the 2003 Van Winkle rye was pretty darn spectacular.
That's my favorite in their range is the rye.
Well, and I was saying that today to someone. I'm like, the ryes are my number one. And I used to, if someone said, well, what about the other stuff? I'm like, oh, you know, the 15 year. I love the 15 year. But I got to say, the last 3 years, I felt like the 20 was actually better than the 15. Because I got to imagine, you know, it's demand. And you're moving this juice around. And you're kind of like, not everything can be the same. It just can't.
Right. And some of the problem with that is, you know, people are paying prices today as if it was still the old Stitzer Weller.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's what created the cult. And now they're still paying.
I mean, you want to go into the cult, you look at the Willets. Do you even get allocated those in New Jersey?
We get a couple of times a year at most. Some will come in, and not a whole lot. Yeah, you know?
I mean, when I go to Kentucky, this will be I go back on Sunday because I'm going to see Mandy on Monday and do another Four Roses barrel pick. And then
tell her I said hello, because definitely. Four Roses doesn't think I deserve any more barrels. She knows. She knows. I stopped and talked to her, but tell her I said hi.
I will. I gotta go. So I do. I'll see her on Monday morning, and then I'll roll straight to Maker's. And now that Trevor's been elevated in position, he's got his new position there. I'm going to do another barrel pick with him. And then I reached out to Marcy at Preservation because, you know, she's everything that you've seen. She's been on another side of it as the curator of the whiskeys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when nobody wanted those bourbons, that her and Julian would get together and be like, who wants this? Do you want it or do I want it? I don't even know if I want it. like nobody wants it. Like
yeah,
it's too
let's
much
flip
money.
A coin and you have
yeah,
to
let's
take
flip a coin and decide.
Want.
Yeah. So I'm gonna go for a tasting there on Monday afternoon, to finish out Monday, with her. She's organizing a pretty cool tasting, and then I think you've been there, but on Tuesday, this is my third visit, but Starlight Distillery down in Indiana.
Nice people, really oh, nice.
I mean, yeah. What a family! What a heritage!
Yeah.
You know, the first time I went in there and Christian took me through all the different barrels that he's got sitting and he's working on, I was kind of like, man, I'm like, I feel like some of the current whiskey is Blockbuster and these dudes were Netflix. Like they're mm-hmm. making the future whiskey
yeah.
with the passion. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That is 100% a passion distillery.
Yeah. And that whole farm, I mean, it's an incredible spot. Yeah.
You know, and just the whole history and him and his brother and the dad, like I love geeking out. Like Tuesday, I'm gonna spend 4 hours in one of the Rick houses and we're just gonna walk around thiefing stuff like we did last time. You know, like just like because he's buying barrels from everywhere.
All
around the world. Last time I was there he had something from down in Brazil, but it wasn't a rum, it was like another liquid that they put in.
Yeah,
and he was aging whiskey, and it was and I was like, "What a unique taste flavor profile!"
Yeah,
Pat, I tell you, man, I hope that we still get access to this amazing stuff, and these newbies kind of just stick to the marketing companies because I feel like there's still a lot of great whiskey out there that I have not got to try. And I rely on going to events like what Mahesh does to kind of learn about, you know, what's from the past. Because we're drinking, you know, you obviously know, you've been there every single year. Like, we're drinking stuff from the past. He doesn't bring in very many marketing companies.
Right.
So, if you were to lock it down to best thing you've ever drank, could you even call that out?
Yep.
What is it?
It's an easy one. The Pogue Castle, 1951.
1951. Wow. Okay. I just tried some of their recent stuff, and I really loved it. I mean, talk about an Irish whiskey house that nobody talks about.
Right. The 51, there were so many flavors going on. It was just all over. Super enjoyable.
Okay. I got to look out on the next auction when nobody's buying. I mean, did you see how the bourbons were like free? Like not one person at any of those two London-based auctions were like, we're not buying bourbon.
Right.
Give a shit about it. Well, Pat, I'm going to have fun with this podcast and kind of just really focus on the passion and the amazing history of whiskey. And when I was thinking of who I wanted to have on, you popped up immediately because you've seen it, you've done it, you live it, and I can't thank you enough for coming on, my friend. I really cannot
thank
you. It's a pleasure.
It's great talking
to you. And I should be back in New York next month and try to time it so I can see you in the city.
Sounds good. Yeah, let me know.
We'll make it happen.
Right,
my friend. Well, happy Friday, and I really appreciate you coming on, and we'll chat soon.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Are you tired of juggling contacts, manually following up, and deals falling through the cracks? We can fix it so you never lose another lead, enabling 24/7 sales and support via an AI that learns your business. Ready to close more deals with less hassle? Get a free trial of our marketing automation at thebuzzcrm.com.